Time to share something cool with you. Today it is books. Vacation reading season is here again, and so is Steve Paulson. He's one of our resident book addicts here at WPR. He's executive producer of WPR's To the Best of Our Knowledge. Steve, welcome back.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks.
Well, you've got some great variety for us. A sociological study of inner city life, an exploration of the limits of science, and a novel set in Italy. Take us to Italy first.
That is right. Yeah. Well, one of the things that I love about literature from other countries is that you get a glimpse of another culture, you know, of another way of life that you really don't know that much about. And that's certainly true with the book that I have here. It's by Elena Ferrante. The book is called My Brilliant Friend. It's actually the first of a trilogy about life in Naples, Italy, starting in about the 1950s or so. And this is, she writes about a kind of these hard scrabble lives of bakers and carpenters and vegetable sellers. And I mean, they're poor. There's a fair amount of violence in these lives. Sort of extends down to the level of the street children. And the title, My Brilliant Friend, refers to, it's basically a story about this very intense friendship between these two girls who are, you know, they're both really, they're the brightest girls in their class. And this is an era, you know, Italy, Naples, 1950s, when, you know, being smart and a girl doesn't really get you very far. Mm. So it's sort of partly dealing with all of that. And you know, the friend of the narrator, this girl named Lila, is sort of this feral child, sort of wild, powerful, intense, but kind of limited by her life circumstances. And so it takes you there sort of very viscerally.
It sounds like it's rich in details about these two characters,
yes,
but also about this place and a very specific time.
Right,
exactly. In history.
Yes, yes. And also, I mean, there's a backstory about the author as well. So Elena Ferrante is, she's a very well-known literary figure in Italy, except for no one knows anything about her. She's sort of like the Thomas Pynchon of Italian letters.
Really?
So it's assumed this is a pseudonym. This is not really her real name. I mean, no one knows what she looks like. No one knows where she lives now. There's even been speculation that it might actually be a man writing these books, although unlikely it would seem, because the details are so vivid about sort of growing up as a girl in Italy. And so it's just, there's this whole mystery, this intrigue about these books, and I think they're just starting to catch on in the United States.
I didn't ask you before this, so do you have a reading for us?
I do. Yeah, I could pull out. Yes. Let me read you a little bit.
Yeah, give
from,
us a taste of the
yes,
feel.
Yes, right near the beginning of it. She says. The narrator is writing this as an old woman reflecting back on her life, and she says, "My friendship with Lila began the day we decided to go up the dark stairs that led, step after step, flight after flight, to the door of Don Achille's apartment. I remember the violet light of the courtyard, the smells of a warm spring evening. The mothers were making dinner. It was time to go home, but we delayed, challenging each other, without ever saying a word, testing our courage. For some time, in school and outside of it, that was what we'd been doing. Lila would thrust her hand and then her whole arm into the black mouth of a manhole, and I, in turn, immediately did the same. My heart pounding, hoping that the cockroaches wouldn't run over my skin, that the rats wouldn't bite me. Lila climbed up to Signora Spagnuolo's ground floor window, and hanging from the iron bar that the clothesline was attached to, swung back and forth, then lowered herself down to the sidewalk, and I immediately did the same, although I was afraid of falling and hurting myself. Lila stuck into her skin the rusted safety pin that she'd found on the street somewhere, but kept it in her pocket like the gift of a fairy godmother. I watched the metal point as it dug a whitish tunnel into her palm, and then when she pulled it out and handed it to me, I did the same.
Wow. Well, can I nominate you to do a chapter a day on that? That was great reading and such vivid writing.
It is. It definitely takes you there.
And this is going to be a trilogy, but I gather it's intended as, it's not a cliffhanger. This is one whole
story. Yeah, and I believe the second volume has also come out in the U.S., has been translated, and I think the third is soon to be published in the United States.
So it's Elena Ferrante, and the title is My Brilliant Friend.
Right, yes.
Well, sounds amazing. Well, let's move on to one. We've actually had the author on the show, Alice Goffman, and her study of inner city life. We talked about her research some. Talk about the book.
Yeah. Well, the book has just come out, and it's fascinating. And Alice Goffman is, she just moved to Madison, is an assistant professor here of sociology at the UW-Madison. And It's the story of life in the inner city, and particularly in this particular neighborhood in Philadelphia, predominantly black neighborhood, and especially the lives of these young men who are, I mean, again, it's another hardscrabble story. I mean, these are men who have extremely limited life options. So, I mean, they're often dealing with sort of small-scale drug dealing. There's a fair amount of crime. They're kind of in and out of the criminal justice system. I mean, part of what she's doing here is she's showing how the war on drugs has been devastating, particularly to the African American community. They've often been targeted. And the reason why the book is called On the Run is these guys are they're on the run from the police. The police are often looking for them. They're often suspects in crimes that have been reported, which they may or may not have been done. But to the point where even if they have gunshot wounds, they avoid hospitals because they know the police are often hanging out there, sort of waiting for them to for possible suspects to show up. So it's a very gritty story. And again, there's another interesting backstory here.
Right. So this is a sociologist. A lot of times, I think of a sociologist doing their survey. Crunching the numbers. That's not how she did this.
No, so she's an ethnographer who sort of follows in the long tradition of participant observation. And there's a fascinating story here. So she comes from a privileged background. She's white. She grew up in Philadelphia, but a completely different neighborhood than this. She went off to an Ivy League school, University of Pennsylvania. She sort of came on this subject. This is something that she wanted to write about for her college thesis. She ended up moving for 6 years into this neighborhood that she was writing about, became very close friends with three of these guys, and to the point where her old life and kind of the normal academic life you'd have as a college student and kind of disappeared. She sort of stopped hanging out with those people. She spent all of her time in this neighborhood. She kind of, there's this sort of fascinating dynamic between race, class, privilege. She learned to sort of talk in a different way, dress in a different way. These became her closest friends. She witnessed shootings, killings, beatings. The whole thing was, it's very gripping. It's sort of a remarkable feat of reporting.
And do you have a reading on this one?
I don't.
Some of the language was strong.
It is strong. I don't have a particular reading in mind here.
But it's an amazing story. It's gotten some controversy over that. Some of the ethics behind it. I mean, she's there. She's witnessing crimes.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And the story is that she, as soon as she finished her research, she apparently burned her research notes because she didn't want to, be subpoenaed.
Wow.
And say, okay, you have to. Yeah. So there is the, is this okay for an academic to be witnessing these things and just sort of, not reporting them to the authorities?
Well, from gritty life in the city, you take us to the limits of science. And I got to say, just before I saw your list today, I saw something about this book and I thought, this sounds like a Steve Paulson kind of book right here.
It's right up my alley.
Marcelo Gleiser, tell us about
him. Yes, Marcelo, he's a physicist at Dartmouth College. And for those of our listeners who may look at the NPR science blog, 13.7, he's one of the founders of that. So he writes regularly there. And so he's very good at writing for a popular audience. And so this is really a story about scientific humility. And, because, you think about it, we're in a lot of ways, we're living in this golden age of physics, of science. We learned all of these new things about sort of the age of the universe, the shape of the universe, and all of that. And Gleiser is saying, we're limited in what if we think we know reality. I mean, that's a fool's errand. He says, we're limited by the instruments that we have. So for instance, the telescope and the microscope opened up new worlds, but we kind of can only know the world through these instruments.
And it's not just that there are things we don't know yet, right? It's that there are things we're probably never going to know.
We're limited by the instruments we have. We're limited also by some facts of nature. For instance, we know that the universe was born roughly 13.8 billion years ago, started then. We can only see as far as light can travel during that time. For all we know, the universe might go on forever. It might be infinite, but we probably would never know that. There are all kinds of other things. The multiverse, this theory that there are many universes probably is untestable. And so he's really saying there's profound mystery there, and he finds that inspiring. He thinks that that's the thing that sort of makes it interesting, that we'll kind of never know sort of really the root nature of reality, even though we may think we do.
And even though he's a scientist, you might think that would be discouraging. He's not.
He is not. No, he finds this very inspiring. He says, this is not defeat. defeatism. This is not anti-science. This is kind of the impulse that drives a lot of scientists to, we may ask questions that we never know answers to, but that's fine. I mean, that's what keeps us going. That's kind of what makes us human in a way.
We've brought us some great books that I'm sure are going to raise a lot of good questions, if not provide answers. Steve, as always, thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks.
That's Steve Paulson. He's executive director of To the Best of Our Knowledge. We bring him on every month to share some awesome reads for you.